Okay, so it's Grace Marshall here, and I have got Francesca Gaines with me today from Digital Dragonfly, which is a technology and productivity consultancy. So I'm really excited about this conversation. I'm really glad I could get Francesca here to really just kind of have a bit of a geek out on this whole issue of technology and productivity. So I don't know about anyone who's watching or listening to this at the moment, but I know that certainly in the work that I do, the workshops I've run, the clients I've worked with, you know, technology is the kind of thing that people go to say, okay, what's the app, what's the tool, what's the tech that can sort my problems out? But then far too often, almost technology becomes a problem. I don't know.
It does.
Mm-hmm. So let's start there. So why technology and productivity? So tell me about kind of what do you do? How did you get into it?
Cool. Yes. So I've been working with clients on technology for the last 6 years, and I suppose it's become increasingly apparent that technology is not enough. Mm. So you're quite right. People do need the tools, and they're constantly looking for new tools and looking for answers, and they want to get organized and they want to get better at doing things and they want to be efficient. I think that's just the way we are.
Yeah.
But then they get stuck and they get overwhelmed with the choice. And there's so much out there these days. So, you know, my clients tend to be solo business owners. So they're kind of working from a home office and they'll be juggling their consultancy business with home life and all the, you know, not just client work, but all the admin that comes from running a business. And so they're very busy people, they're very time poor, and they're keen to be efficient and organized. And so they're always looking for the next new shiny tool. And so I suppose from the work I do with them, like, yes, we do all the core techie stuff, you know, making sure they have a decent computer, that they have backup, that they have good business email, that everything syncs, that they're using the right kind of cloud services. And once you put all those basics in place, you get down to the nitty-gritty of day-to-day work, so managing a to-do list, processing emails, getting workflows in place that connect to your various tools and tasks. Mm. And then that's where it starts slowing down for people, or getting a bit tricky or a bit challenging, or they get a bit overwhelmed and they feel a bit stuck. So I'm kind of increasingly thinking, you know, technology is not enough. You need to use it well. And that's where the whole productivity thing comes in.
Yeah.
It's like using those tools appropriately for you in your business and your workflows. Mm. And that's different for everyone.
Yes.
And so there's no really right answer. Like, people read lots of books, but each book will be quite almost prescriptive in that author's methodology or insight.
Yeah.
But people need to almost take a little bit from lots of places and then apply it to themselves. And that's really hard.
Mm. Yeah, it's almost like trying to get your own personal recipe, your own personal cocktail kind of mixed together. I mean, I've even found, like, some people I work with, yeah, we talk, the minute we start talking about technology, they're like, actually, I feel saturated with technology. There's just so much going on. You know, and then you also get some people who are just naturally a little bit resistant, you know, a bit of a technophobe, bit of a, oh, actually, every time I go near a computer, something goes wrong. Can I just stay away from it? You know?
Yeah.
I mean, how do you find that?
It is a real mix. It is a real mix. And I love the fact that you use cocktail. That's a much more fun. And I tend to say prescription cocktail. That's nice. It is. It is a kind of personal cocktail. And I think that's kind of probably what I enjoy the most about my job. And then I get to serve people, help them find the cocktail they like best, or give them that prescription, as I tend to refer to it. Mm. But yes, people do kind of feel sometimes really blocked with it. And you're quite right. There's so much choice out there. And some people do resist it. And so I think sometimes it's okay to go, okay, well, you know, what's the analog version of this tool? Or, like, let's start, you know, sometimes getting organized in a non-digital way will make it easier to transition to digital. I mean, there tend to be such advantages to using a tool that ultimately that does tend to be the way to go, you know, probably because people, you know, might want to share it with an associate or an assistant, or because they can have it on their phone and not always need to carry the notebook or paper with them. But I think sometimes maybe taking it offline and doing a good old-fashioned list is a good way to kind of get the control back as you figure out what your systems and processes are, and then matching them up with a tool kind of in a less hurried way could work.
Yeah, I find that as well. So I find sometimes when you start a new tool, I mean, every tool that's out there probably has a tutorial. They try and kind of take you through how to do something. So I know one particular tool, which is one that I use, whenever I demo it to other people, I'll go, okay, this is how I use it. You might use it differently. But as soon as they sign up for an account, it asks them things like, you, what do you want to do every day? What do you want to get done today? And it's the tutorial is great to get started, but that's not necessarily how you want to use it. Yep. So I find sometimes if you've done that mapping out of how do I want my tool to work first, then you can go, right, how do I get this to do it? Yeah. Otherwise you end up kind of following all the bells and whistles.
I think you're right. And I think there's two things there. One, you need to be really clear why you want the tool. Mm-hmm. And that's always, people seem to do that the wrong way around. Yeah. And secondly, it is an investment. If you, once you find the tool and you think it's the right tool, like you do need to spend a bit of time looking at those tutorials or learning the shortcuts, and people will try and skip that. And then, you know, I tend to come in and go, okay, so, you know, fine, you've been using this tool for 3 years and great, it looks like you've got a good setup going. But then, you know, half an hour with me looking at them, we're like, oh, have you looked at this shortcut? Did you know you could do that? Did you realize you could, oh my God, I didn't realize I could, you know, shortcut or forward this or do whatever. And then suddenly they've taken it to the next level, and that's really powerful. That's really powerful as well. But I think the having the clarity as to what you're looking for is an important one. I wrote something in my blog recently, is kind of, you know, the one thing that you need to stop doing to be more productive is to stop reading the blog posts that list the 10 new tools or the 20 free tools or the 5 essential tools that every freelance business owner needs or the 25 essential tools that your home office, you know. I mean, I love those as well, but I legitimately am allowed to read them because it's research. But anyone else should just stop, because it's likely that they probably already have the right tool, or, you know, that they need to just maybe use it better before they look for something else, or to just stop and go, well, what exactly am I looking for? And then with a very clear shopping list, go out and get the advice or do the research. And it often happens in a roundabout way.
Yeah, definitely. And I think it's just it's quite easy to get caught up in that, isn't it? Go, oh, that's the, you know, those are the 5 things I need, or those are the 3 things. I mean, I get a similar thing. So one of my bugbears is often when people ask me, Grace, what's the top productivity tip? Yeah, what's your top, you know, what's the one thing? I'm like, well, you tell me the one thing you're struggling with the most, and I can give you know, tell you where to start, because it's just different things for different people, and everyone's on in a different place in their journey.
Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, I see people will put on Facebook, oh, I'm looking for a small business CRM, and it needs to be free, and it needs to be this, and there's like 10 things that it needs to do. And then like 10 people will reply all with 10 different answers going, oh, I love this, and I use that. And they're all legitimate, but you're still nowhere in a better place, because you need to know why you need it for yourself. And just because your, you know, buddy down the road thinks that something's great, not guaranteed that it's going to be good for you. And there's a lot of time gets wasted on that kind of misspent searching for, don't know, shiny tools.
Yeah, so Google overwhelm, almost kind of Googling everything. So yeah. I know you do like a tech teardown service with your clients, where you kind of, you get really honed in on what they need and where the pitfalls are and all that kind of stuff. How do you generally tend to approach that? What's your starting point?
So I kind of let them guide me to it. It's obviously because those are quite short calls, and the idea is that it's supposed to be, you know, an initial look at and try and get find some quick wins where they can feel like, oh yeah, I'm stuck here. And everybody seems to approach it in a different way. So they answer a little questionnaire before. And that seems to quickly guide us to where the issue is. And it's very interesting. Like, some people very much want to show me their to-do list or their email inbox and why it's not quite right, or what they have done specifically to address it, or you know, which set of tools they decided to use. And then I find it really interesting just to start, you know, it's because we do a remote session, so I can see it. And so they'll say, they will take me through their processes. Okay, this is how I do it. An email comes in, or these are the tasks. And so through that, we just end up having a conversation. And I'm like, just questioning, well, why are you doing that? You know, why are you doing that? There's lots of like, why are you doing that questions? Mm-hmm. And, you know, have you thought of this? Or did you realize that this is functionality? Or have you ever looked at this tool, like as a comparison? And so it ends up being a conversation about the tool itself, mm-hmm. how they have chosen to use it, and perhaps some functionality that they need to explore, or, you know, productivity techniques that work nicely with that tool, mm-hmm. that will help them, you know, get more out of it. And I love doing those calls. It's so good. It's really very, very satisfying.
Mm. So do people tend to come out with like more stuff to do or more tools to use, or do they tend to come out with, I mean, I'm guessing, I'm thinking three things here. Like, I suppose some people might come away with like, oh, here are the things I'm not using that would help me. And then there's probably an element of some people who, like the magpie syndrome, the shiny object syndrome, who maybe have too many tools. And yeah, actually the answer is like, you need to stop using some of those. And some people, I guess it might be like, actually your tools are fine, you just need to use them better.
It is a bit of everything. Mm. It is a bit of everything. And it's all very different. I definitely am kind of like, my philosophy, it tends to be kind of less is more. So what is the least number of tools you can get away with to do what you need to do effectively? There's no point trying to find like one tool that's going to do everything. Like, that's not going to work either. But equally, there's probably not as many as you think you need to effectively do your work. Mm. So I always try and like start with the basics and then take it from there. And so, you know, for me, the most important thing to have under control is email, mm-hmm. not just from like how you process it, but the fact that the back end is working and syncing, and that it's actually backed up and on all your devices. So real basic stuff, like I'm always looking out for stuff like that. And then like the way people will organize their documents and file structures. And also when I see somebody's desktop, that is often a really straight insight into where problems will lie. Because I mean, it just actually physically affects my, I think my blood pressure. If you see a desktop that is covered in shortcuts and documents and things, then that person, when they turn on their computer with the intent of doing work or being inundated with information and old documents, so there's clutter, there's distractions, there is a sense of overwhelm that they, it's going to take them a while to get to where they need to be. And so I think that really takes away, so they've decided they want to do work, and they're turning on the computer, which is their tool to do the work, and the work is in the computer, but to get to the work, there's all this stuff that's in the way. And simplifying that path and taking out the distractions and setting in a structure so that they can turn on the computer and get to the work in one straight line, in the least, you know, in the shortest period of time, is really important. So I've been doing a lot of work with clients on like looking at like digital distraction and digital clutter at the moment. All these little things that will take away from, ultimately all you want to do is do your work. You have a focus and you need to achieve that. And if technology is getting in the way instead of helping you, then that's, you know, what I want to kind of, you know, help them with, like notifications. I've got most of mine turned off. So I almost forget how bad it can be. But if I'm working with someone and not just the email notifications coming in, but those annoying new browser type notifications that come in, and there's Skype running in the background and that's pinging away, and there's stuff coming from all directions. And I'm like, oh my God, you know, that just that kind of thing. People don't realize every time something takes their attention, it's going to take them a really long time to get back to what they were trying to work on. Yeah. And that's like technology at its worst, then. That's just not helping you. So, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
All of that. And so, like, you might start a remote session on the teardowns and they want to talk to you about a very specific thing. But in the process of looking at that, I might point out the desktop. I'll see all these notifications. Mm. I'll notice that there's like 12,000 unread emails in their inbox. And so it's like, well, yes, you want to look at your to-do list, but actually, you know, there's other things you could look at that are going to help you. And so they probably will, you know, a lot of them might leave the call with very actionable, you know, like a little list of things to do. Okay, yeah, I clearly know I'm going to go and clear my emails, and I just got a few tips to get me started there. I mean, email is a big topic, so there's no way there's like a quick fix, but it'll have, you know, a little bit of direction to help feel better about that. They can, you know, think about their file structure. So it's like the creating awareness of where that they can make improvements and feeling that it is possible to make it a more positive experience when they want to do their work.
Yeah. And I suppose that's the thing about overwhelm, isn't it? So I've noticed is, yeah, when you get to that state of overwhelm, it doesn't take much. It's like the straw on the camel's back. It just one thing, because there's just so much of it, each individual thing might be quite simple, but when it's all in one place, it just becomes overwhelming. It becomes too big because there are too many unanswered questions. I remember an interview once with somebody where she said, you know, the clutter is just unmade decisions.
Oh, that's nice. Yeah.
And you know, and it's like actually the fact that you have so many unmade decisions in your inbox, on your to-do list, on your desktop, on your desk, you know, it becomes just like lots and lots of questions screaming away at you. And each individual question could be fairly straightforward to answer, but when you have a whole bunch of them, it's like walking into a room full of screaming kids.
Yeah, it's true though. You need to deal with it. Yeah. It's hard. Yeah, people don't know where to start. And it's a tough one.
And has that become more of a problem, do you think? You know, is that a growing thing?
I think it has. Mm. I think it has. I think because, I mean, it's interesting. When I started the business 6 years ago, it was kind of like the cloud was starting to become very mainstream. So we kind of almost forget this. Mm. So it wasn't, you know, like services like Office 365 were only just launched. Mm. You know, it was a lot of these online tools were just being born, so to speak. And things were not as complicated as they are now. And I think what I've seen certainly over that period is this real rise of there's new tools coming out all the time. There's all these cloud services. Our phones have got so much more going on them as well. And everybody's got a little bit more savvy at wanting to get your attention with their message. Yeah. So notifications are a big one for that. Social media has grown a lot since then. So I think there's just a lot more noise that we need to cut out. And interestingly now, I mean, there's like you'll probably see in the press this week, you know, Nokia has re-released their you know, dumb phone or whatever they're calling it. And I'm like, that's great. Yeah. In a way, you know, it's kind of we're going back. Like maybe we've gone full cycle. I don't know. There's a backlash now. People want simplicity. They want less notification. They want to make it easier to switch off. Mm. It's so hard to switch off from all your tech. Yeah. And so, yeah, maybe there's now a new, I don't know, we'll see.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I was very excited when I saw that Nokia announcement. It's like, oh, I cool used to colors. Have that phone.
No,
yeah,
that's really good.
Definitely. Yeah, I mean, I've noticed even there are some like holiday retreat type places that advertise themselves as like Wi-Fi free.
Yeah,
there's no signal here.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it is interesting. I mean, we try and have like switch off weekends or switch off Saturdays or switch off Sundays with the kids. Yeah. They actually really like it because it means asking for the iPad is not an option and nobody gets to use anything. So even the adults are not allowed to be on their phones. And it's good. There's just like, you know, there's nobody can nag about anything because it's not an option. So yeah, we try and do that.
Yeah, we do as well. And I know who says it's interesting because I think there's something about technology that tends to be like the tool tells you what to do. You know, all the tools are set up in a way that you kind of go to the screen and it tells you what to do next. So there's something to swipe or there's something to press or there's something to pay attention to. So it's almost like the technology leads you into what to think or what to do and how to pay attention. Whereas I've noticed with my kids, when I get them to switch off, like initially they're like, oh, what do I do? Yeah, and they're kind of like, yeah, I don't know what to do. And then you kind of have that lull of boredom. And then all of a sudden they're playing, they're role playing, they're using their imagination, they're thinking of ideas. And, you know, and I think, you know, probably the same thing happens with us as adults. But actually when we switch off, that's when our brain kicks back into that, you know, I suppose that leadership mode where we're leading, we're imagining, we're thinking, we're initiating things, we're having ideas rather than almost waiting to be prompted by a screen to tell us what to think about next.
Yeah. No, I think that makes a lot of sense. It's true. I mean, it's actually exactly the same with my kids. It takes them a while to like shift modes or whatever. And then suddenly, yeah, they're being very creative. The Lego comes out again and they're building stuff and doing more like free play. And yeah, it's very nice.
Yeah.
No, we could probably learn from that in our businesses, can't we?
Definitely. So I wonder what your take on this is. So some people have been saying to me, like, are we going to see the death of email anytime soon? I think I've spotted occasionally some, you know, companies saying, actually, we're not using email so much. We're using more Slack or other things.
Yeah, that's interesting.
So what do you think?
I think that's interesting. I think maybe, I mean, email's a real, you know, time suck, but then Slack can be as well. So are we just moving the problem from one place to another? That's to be discussed. I don't think we can avoid email outside, like between people outside organizations, because I don't think that's going to go anywhere. I think within teams, there's definitely scope to decrease email and to move stuff to tools like Slack. I mean, I'm a big fan of Slack, but being in a couple of channels myself, I can see that there's like a whole new set of issues in there. But I think for a team in a work environment, it's very positive on the whole if it's controlled or done well. The idea that it's not, you know, that there's it's not just like between people and then lots of like BCCing or CCing going on, that it's more a kind of communal effort and you can put things by topic and people can contribute and it's a bit more in your own time. I don't know. I mean, there's definitely issues with both. I think maybe more important is kind of having a kind of like a team culture or approach to work. You know, companies now saying, well, you know, I don't expect you to reply out of hours, or, you know, kind of being tighter. Or some companies, they have great rules in the summer holidays where you get an out of office saying this person's on holiday, but actually, and your email will be deleted type thing, so that they don't come back to them. I mean, because that's always a nightmare, isn't it? You go away for 2 weeks, so you come back, there's like 3,000 emails that need replying, and then you're all the holiday effect is just gone as you open Outlook. And so the idea that all the emails would actually be deleted so that the sender needs to either find someone else to bother or reconnect, you know, when the person I want to speak to is back. That's quite nice. So I think cultural, like team solutions and approaches are helpful in managing what's expected in things like, whether it's Slack or email, it's to do with expectations, setting boundaries, and being disciplined enough to switch off.
Definitely. Yeah, and I think this is what I find. So, you know, I do a couple of workshops that are email related. You know, there's the kind of getting your inbox to zero, which is very much about personal survival, about that. How do you deal with just the deluge of volume? But then, you know, the other workshop's called Email Etiquette, which is much more around that culture. Because there's only so much you can do on your own in terms of dealing with what comes in. actually the bigger problem is how do we use email or Slack or whatever? And just because, you know, just when you get the tool. So it's interesting. I've noticed a lot of companies tend to do digital transformation from a technology end. So it's like, okay, we're now going to use these set of tools. Go. And there's maybe some technical training, but there isn't any, there's no conversation, there's no policy, there's no manifesto around the etiquette of what is this for? How do we use it well?
Yeah.
You know, what's okay, what's not okay? And so what's everyone comes, everyone comes with like their own assumptions. So, you know, there'll be one person who maybe had a previous boss who wanted to be CC'd on everything. And then they bring that into the workplace, and so they start CCing all their bosses. You know, you get that kind of effect where somebody goes, well, I don't expect somebody to reply to me straight away, but people always expect me to, so I feel like I have to be tied to it. And you just get like a whole load of assumptions, and nobody's actually had a proper conversation about it.
Nobody wants to address that, or nobody knows how to address it. And there's lots of egos and all sorts. I mean, sorry, I've got to say, one of the things I really don't miss about going self-employed is office politics and the whole email thing. I mean, I'll never forget this idea of like, you know, like say I was sent an email and then people would be copied in on it, and then, you know, people would then reply on like almost on your, because they want to get in first. Yes. And it's like, you know, life is too short for this. All of that kind of stuff. Yeah, I think that's one of the nice things about me and my clients. Like, we're all self-employed, and so we've managed to step away from a lot of the type of problems you get when there are teams, especially if they're, actually, I wonder if it would be different in your experience. Teams that are in offices, I wonder if you get more office politics like that than this growing trend. My experience with teams is more like virtual teams. So I might have a client who is growing a practice, like a coaching practice or something, and they will work with associates, but they might be distributed globally or across, you know, geographic regions. So they're not necessarily, they don't see each other day to day. And I wonder, my theory is that their behavior patterns on email are very different to like a group of people that turn up to an office and are all kind of like, you know, I don't know, people kind of get into these modes of trying to climb the ladder or show off or be there for their boss, and then office politics. I don't know. I mean, you've probably seen this like much closer than I have.
I think a lot of it is to do with how you measure success. So, you know, places that measure success based on outcomes, results, what they're actually producing, have a very different feel to places that have a measure of success based on face time, you know, how I guess it's impression management versus productivity. So like, for example, I was talking to someone who works in HR recently, and we were talking about how some of the measures of like some, you know, performance management are still really old school. There's still things like, you know, how much overtime has this person done? You know, and it's like, oh no, we can't give them any bonuses because they've got all their work done within their working hours. Like, and you want to discourage that?
So they're being really productive, and they're gonna like not get a bonus, whereas the person who's on Facebook half the day and then stays for overtime is gonna get there.
That's it. Or you know, the person who sends the most emails, you know, gets visible, who raises the most meetings, who emails people on a Sunday evening, or you know, is always emailing at 4 o'clock in the morning. You know, and it's like, you know, if you want to measure FaceTime, you know, you're doing a great job, but like, if you want to measure productivity, actually, it's probably the people who are preventing the fires rather than responding to them. It's probably the people who are managing their attention and their time well, and actually getting the work done, rather than the ones who feel like they have to stay late to, you know, to get more of it. And also, you know, it's maybe the people who are getting the work done rather than creating the work.
Interesting. No, I think that's very interesting. And I think there's a real trend for some of the newer kind of global teams, like the buffer type companies, where they're very much, it's all to do with what's achieved rather than they don't mind when you work as long as what you need to do is done. And they have various tools and measures in place to measure productivity and enhance teamwork in different ways, which I think it's very interesting. And I do wonder, like, I do think in those environments, then the tools like Slack will come into their own because they're being used in a very positive way in terms of its teamwork, its focus. People are trying to get on with the job and nobody's trying to, you know, stay later. You can't even measure overtime because you're in different time zones. I mean, this is great, really. So yes, I think, yeah, it's an interesting trend.
Definitely. Cool. Okay, so a few questions about you then. So what's we talked about tools, and I know it's different things for different people, but yeah, what are the tools that you could not do without?
Oh, my favorite tools. Interesting. So what could I not do without? I love Outlook. So my back end email is Office 365. I've got that everywhere and that just works. And I've got a system there that works. So that's kind of like my core day-to-day stuff's happening there. I love Trello. That's kind of how I organize. I kind of like the whole Kanban approach to breaking down a to-do list. So I love Trello. Though more recently I've been experimenting, I can't show it on the wall behind me. I've been experimenting with sticky notes. So I've been doing like physical Kanban to kind of experiment with that in comparison to the tool. And I'm quite enjoying that. So I like that approach. What else? I'm quite enjoying Slack, actually. For a long time, I had no reason to use it because I'm not really part of a big team. But I joined a mastermind group recently after going to a conference last year, and we use Slack to stay in touch with each other between our mastermind calls. And it's actually very nice. So I'm adding that one. That's a new addition to my list of essentials. And I really like mind mapping. So I've been doing a lot more mind mapping. So I use MindMeister for that, which is a really nice tool as well. So yeah.
Brilliant.
So those are my it's ever changing, but those are my top ones at the moment.
Cool. That's great. I think my favorite ones at the moment are the expense apps that I use. So Expensify has just changed my whole expense life. So I do a lot of travel, and when I go traveling, I have I have receipts. I've got, some of them are paid by cash if it's a taxi, some of them are on card. It's just like all over the place. And the last thing I want to do is have to scan everything in and put it on a spreadsheet. That takes time. So being able to just take a photo with an app on my phone, and it does most of the reading for you. You just have to check and make sure it's kind of read it right. It is beautiful.
My accountants have got an app that goes with their software, and you almost take it for granted that I take a photo, I'm like, I've bought the ticket, I'm on the train, I've taken a photo, it goes in. I don't see that again. The bookkeeper then deals with it and we're done. So that is beautiful.
Definitely. I think technology probably is at its best when it takes away the stuff we hate doing.
Yes. All those little time-consuming things. Yeah, absolutely.
Definitely. Cool. What about when you recharge? Do you switch off? What's your favourite way to recharge? Is it a tech thing or a non-tech thing?
Definitely a non-tech thing. I think reading a book, actually a physical book. I've never been into kind of e-readers, Kindle or anything. I still like to hold a real book. So reading a book in front of the fire is definitely a nice way to recharge. Would have to be switch off time.
Yeah, brilliant. And what's the most helpful productivity advice you've had?
Oh, most helpful. I think probably it probably goes back to when I was first introduced to this whole concept of productivity. It was probably even before I read, David Allen's book was pretty important, because that suddenly gave me this whole kind of structure and framework to organize things. But it probably goes back one step. In one of my first jobs, I did an internship at Goldman Sachs in New York. And so it was like this massive learning curve, suddenly being in this very polished kind of investment banking environment. And the person that was kind of, I suppose, my mentor that I was, you know, supposed to be helping, he was really into doing lists. He was a great list maker. And so I saw every day he started his day by writing his list, and he'd have his notebook, he'd look at the list from the day before, and he would then take what was carried over and like add to it. And that, I suppose, I was like, oh, that's interesting. I'd never, like, this was completely new to me as a, you know, just, I just finished a degree. So, you know, kind of, obviously I'd been organized, but I don't think I'd ever applied anything systematic to it. So I remember being, I'd started doing lists, and I carried that on for a long time, and that went in with me to my first job. And then I read the Getting Things Done book, and then I was able to take the list and like take it to the next level, which is very interesting. So yeah, making lists. Very good. Very good tip.
And I like that it's a really simple one as well.
It's really simple.
Some of the simple ones are the best.
You can't beat a list. Yeah. It's, keep it simple.
So what's the worst productivity advice you've ever had?
Oh my goodness. I hope that I would have forgotten that and quickly. Probably... not sure about advice, but I've certainly inherited really unproductive ways of working. Like I'll never forget in one of my jobs, it was an arts organization. It was very paper-based. It was very, everything was manual, and copies had to be made and filed, and things were duplicated. And I just remember going, oh my goodness, like there has got to be a better way to do this. And they were very set in this very, it was really clunky way of dealing, processing information through, you know, the team that I was in. So I remember for the years that I worked there, I was always the one questioning it and changing it and simplifying it. And like, I don't think we need to print this out. We can keep it online. You know, we can just leave it on the computer. I think, just really workflows that hadn't been questioned for years, definitely very unproductive. Yeah, not good.
Yeah. Cool. So how would you define productivity then? What would your personal definition be?
Oh, wow. That's a really good question. I would probably say productivity, it's doing the things that are important to you within a time frame that is, you know, appropriate for the things you want to do. So, but actually achieving what you want to achieve without distraction or feeling stuck or overwhelmed. I suppose so. I think it's about being able to give yourself focus. So whatever you need to put in place for that to happen, I suppose, is what would result in productive working, I think.
I like that. Yeah, giving yourself what you need, giving yourself that focus. Okay, brilliant, great. So I think we have, we've come up to time, so let's wrap up quickly. Tell people how they can find out more about you.
You can go to my website, digitaldragonfly.co.uk. I've got a free 5-day email course on there, which could be helpful. I think it's called something like From Tech Overwhelm to Productivity in 5 days. So check that out. And I can be found on Twitter or Instagram, F_dragonfly. So it's always a nice place to get in touch as well.
Brilliant. Great stuff. Yeah. So I don't know about you, but I know I'd love to continue the conversation. So if anyone wants to continue the conversation over on Twitter, feel free to tag us in, and then we can carry on chatting technology and productivity. So thank you so much for joining me. And to those of you who are watching, thanks so much for joining us. Have a great day.